Good afternoon, and welcome to the reading of the Waterloo Cedar Falls, The Courier. It's Friday, October 1st. I'm your reader, Bob Young. We can expect thunderstorms in spots today, south winds between 7 and 14 miles per hour. Our high will be 82 degrees today, and the low tonight, 62 degrees, with clouds and thunderstorms. Looking at the regional outlook, clouds and sun today, with widely separated thunderstorms, considerable cloudiness, and mild tonight, with a thunderstorm. Cloudy tomorrow, with a thunderstorm in spots in the afternoon. Sunday will be mostly sunny. Sunrise was 7:07 a.m., and the sun sets tonight at 6:51 p.m. We have quite a variety of stories on the front page today. They are Hosts with Ghosts, Retired Educator, Keep Facts in Schools, and You and I, Professor, Now Online Only. And we will begin reading Human Remains Could Be Boy Who Vanished in May. This story was filed by the Associated Press, and it begins with a photograph of a school bus with adults all dressed in high-vis vests are boarding the bus. And the caption reads, "Volunteers gather to search for Xavier Harrelson, a 10-year-old missing boy, at Montezuma High School in Montezuma in May." Montezuma. Investigators searching for an Iowa boy who vanished in May, days before his 11th birthday, said Thursday they have found human remains matching his description in a nearby cornfield. The remains were discovered by a farmer working in a field a few miles outside Montezuma, where 10-year-old Xavier Harrelson was reported missing May 27th from the trailer park where he lived. The farmer called the Poweshiek County Sheriff's Office, which responded to the scene. Iowa Division of Criminal Investigation Assistant Director Mitch Mortvedt told KCCI-TV. State agents and the Iowa Office of State Medical Examiner and the state anthropologist also responded and confirmed that they were remains, he said. Quote, "It appears to be that of an adolescent, and at the time, the clothing that we see on scene, even though it's obviously soiled and stuff, is consistent with what we knew Xavier to last be wearing," Mortvedt told the station. He said authorities were not ready to identify the body as belonging to Xavier, adding that state medical examiner and anthropologist have, quote, "a lot of work left ahead of them in the days and weeks even to come," unquote. Authorities said they had relayed the news to Xavier's mother. The boy's disappearance from Montezuma, a town of 1,300 people, that is 70 miles east of Des Moines, had baffled investigators and saddened residents for months. A 50-year-old man who was a boyfriend of the boy's mother has come under scrutiny and been jailed on a federal weapons charge, but authorities have not alleged that he was involved in the disappearance. County, state, and federal investigators had been examining whether the boy was abducted, ran away, or had some kind of accident, and had searched several areas in the region in recent months. Harrelson lived with his mother in the Spruce Village trailer park. He was gone by the morning of May 27th, and a friend's mother called authorities later that day to report the boy missing after speaking with Xavier's worried mother. On what would have been his 11th birthday on May 30th, hundreds of volunteers and law enforcement officials searched the nearby Diamond Lake County Park and other areas for him. Xavier had completed his fourth grade at Montezuma Elementary School on May 21st and was off for summer break. He was known for riding his bike around the trailer park. Xavier is a happy kid who gets along well with his peers and wants to please his teachers, one of his teachers, Marie Bolton, said in June. Quote, "He's always willing to help you out, engage in a conversation, and offers a smile to everyone he sees," unquote. The disappearance happened during closing arguments of a murder trial of a local farmhand charged with killing 20-year-old Molly Tibbetts, who vanished about 15 miles away in the same county in 2018 while out for a run in her hometown of Brooklyn. Defense lawyers for the man convicted of first-degree murder in that case tried to raise suspicions about whether the two apparent kidnappings were connected, but law enforcement officials have rejected that scenario. Our next story was filed by Andrew Wind. Retired educator creates video that encourages teaching the truth in schools, Waterloo. Fact-based information was an essential part of what Denny McCabe communicated to his students as an American history teacher. But after House File 802 was signed into law by Governor Kim Reynolds in June, he became concerned that might not be possible any longer in the classroom. The legislation focuses on issues related to racism, sexism, diversity, and inclusion. It prohibits the teaching of these so-called divisive concepts by public schools, universities, colleges, and government entities, or including them in any mandatory training. Now retired after a career at Hoover Middle School, McCabe is encouraging teachers in the Waterloo Community Schools to, quote, teach the truth through a video he created with the help of Danny Carlson. Just over 6 minutes long, it includes comments from two district teachers and several retired educators, plus current and former students and other community members. They will screen the video at 1:30 p.m. Saturday in the second floor conference room of the Waterloo Public Library, 415 Commercial Street. It will then be made public online, where the creators hope it will be shared widely. McCabe described the video as a statement to make people aware there is support for teachers who will go out on a limb, but acknowledged it's probably wishful thinking that it will change people's minds. Quote, I'm calling it a back-to-school teach the truth video, and it was kind of inspired by the Zinn Education Group, said McCabe. The National Zinn Education Project last spring identified the legislation along with bills in 14 other states that it said endangered teachers' ability to teach truthfully in class. Previously, he organized a day of action educators pledged to teach the truth before undertaking this latest venture. McCabe said the Zinn Education Project plans to promote the video on social media once it's released. In the video, he further explains what he and others are asking of educators. Quote, teaching the truth simply means providing knowledge and awareness to reduce the ignorance that can lead to fear, hate, and violence. Teaching the truth is not about being divisive. It's about presenting verifiable, factual content. It's about knowing the truth about the past to improve the future, unquote. Carla Cook, an English teacher at East High School, is one of the current teachers who speaks in the video. Quote, basically, I'm just committed to teaching the truth, and that's what I talk about in the video, she said. I also talk about how my students expect to learn the truth in my classes at East High School. The truth is messy, and I think one of the most important things we can do is stand up to state that, unquote. She added, I have no problem with my district and how they handle this. They're wonderful. This is about a state process, unquote. According to the legislation, it does not prohibit use of curriculum that teaches topics of sexism or slavery and racial oppression, segregation, or discrimination. Among the list of concepts it outlaws are that moral character is determined by one's race or sex, and that the U.S. or Iowa are fundamentally racist. Quote, it's almost like they're trying to erase something, said Cook. Pretending that things didn't happen will never make things better. Quote, there is so much in it, and yet it says so little. Still, she observed, I think it might be intended for intimidation. McCabe agreed, quote, I think statewide and maybe nationwide, 802 is having a chilling effect, he said. The next story comes to us from the Gazette writer Vanessa Miller. UNI professor who imposed mask mandate in his class is relieved of in-person teaching duties for the semester. Cedar Falls. The University of Northern Iowa biology professor, who this month imposed a mask mandate in his class and threatened lower grades for violators, in contradiction of Board of Regents and university policies, has been relieved of in-person teaching duties for the rest of the semester and won't be eligible for merit pay this year. Professor Steve L. O'Kane, who is 64 and has been at UNI for 26 years, will be allowed to continue teaching his online courses according to a disciplinary letter from UNI College of Humanities, Arts and Sciences, Dean John Fritsch. That letter, provided to the Gazette, told O'Kane that, going forward, you will be expected to comply with all university and Board of Regents policies, including all policies or directives regarding masks or face coverings. Failure to follow such policies may result in further disciplinary action up to and including termination, unquote. O'Kane said Monday he imposed a mask mandate in his class and threatened to lower students' lab grades if they refused to cover their faces. His disciplinary letter cites his quote in the Gazette saying, quote, "My students, not surprisingly, now all wear masks as they know there will be consequences to their grades," unquote. Quote, "Based on this information, it is apparent you have acted in violation of university and Board of Regents policy by requiring masks of your students," according to the letter. Quote, "Further, you have violated UNI Policy 610 regarding your responsibilities to your students by threatening to lower your students' grades should they refuse to comply with your self-imposed mask mandate," unquote. His specific discipline includes the following: completing training addressing his professional responsibilities as a faculty member, including following university policies, by November 30th. Also, receiving a needs improvement performance evaluation for the 2021-22 academic year, making him ineligible for merit pay. And lastly, being removed from his in-person course immediately and replaced by another faculty member, although he'll keep teaching online and be assigned other duties. O'Kane said he holds no animosity toward the UNI administrators who penalized him, and even if Regent and campus policies remain unchanged, he'll impose another mask mandate in his class if given the chance to teach in person in the spring semester. Quote, "The answer is yes. I'll stick with the mask requirement," he said. These are risks, O'Kane said, he can make, given he's so close to retirement. Quote, "I'm just 1, 2, 3 years from retirement," he said, "and if I were to be terminated, this would not ruin my life," unquote. He said other faculty on his campus also have imposed mask mandates in their classes, but said he's the only one who's been willing to put his name out there publicly. Quote, I know the upper administration knows that I'm not the only civil disobedient here at UNI," he said. "I just happen to be the only one to have his name attached to it," unquote. UNI officials said they have not received other reports of or complaints of unauthorized mask requirements in classrooms or on campus, despite O'Kane's assertion. The professor met with administrators Tuesday to discuss the matter, during which he acknowledged understanding board and UNI policies. Quote, "I told the provost, most of us somewhere in our lives have a hill they're willing to die on," he said, "and this is one of my hills," unquote. In a statement, UNI officials said they're deeply committed to the health and safety of our campus community, unquote. Quote, "Under Board of Regents directives, neither the university nor faculty can mandate that masks be worn on campus, including in classrooms," according to the statement. Regents President Mike Richards in May issued guidance barring the state's three public universities from requiring masks, social distancing, or COVID-19 vaccinations. Although that was issued before the Delta variant worsened the spread, the new wave of infections and demands from faculty asking for local control, Richards has remained steadfast in his prohibition of mandates. O'Kane said he endured some soul-searching before deciding to take a public stand on the issue, but was motivated by high-risk friends. Quote, "I had a pang of conscience, honestly," he said. It said, "You need to do the moral and ethical thing. You simply must. I feel that I have a moral imperative to protect," unquote. And now this is actually the lead story on the front page, Hosts with the Ghosts. And the story begins with a photograph of the Harris Haven Funeral Home Haunted House in Evansdale, which opens on Friday. Melody Parker filed this story. It's haunted house season. Two of the most popular haunts in the Cedar Valley and Iowa will open Friday, and their operators predict long lines of people ready for the scare at the Heart of Darkness Haunted House in Waterloo and Harris Haven Funeral Home Haunted House in Evansdale. Gary Hill, owner of Harris Haven, refuses to spill the beans on his newest attraction, but he's certain it will be a frightful hit. Quote, "I'll just say it's brand new, and I think people are going to love it. They should come check it out. We've worked hard to bring people something new and different. And if a haunted funeral home, cemetery, and deranged caretaker aren't enough," Hill said, "we'll have a lot of other changes, adding new props and adding new items to the cemetery and a new fogger. All of that should make it a lot scarier," he said. A fortune teller is a new offering at Harris Haven, who will be open for business during Fright Nights at the Haunt. For the younger kids, Hall has Jacob's Playhouse, a haunt for kids 10 and under who must be accompanied by adults. Kevin Schultz, who has been scaring the yell out of clouds at the Heart of Darkness for the last 19 years, said he and his boo crew are ready to welcome patrons to their new nightmare. Quote, "This year's show is primo, and we've been working our butts off getting it ready. We have the best fear engineers out there," he said. Patrons are haunted throughout a 22,600-square-foot complex on Heartland Farms, making it the largest and longest walk through a haunted attraction in Iowa. Schultz, who grew up a horror movie aficionado, includes such scary attractions as Darkhold Castle, Zombie Survival House, The Dead Walker's Crypt, The Killer Circus in 3D, and Blackout Thursdays, which require patrons to sign a waiver that allows scary actors to jump out and touch them as they wind through attractions. Concessions, the Zombie Band, a fog maze, and Theater of Fear horror movies keep visitors entertained as they wait their turn to enter the haunts. "We want to entertain people from the time they get in the gate until the time they leave," Schultz said. He also has big plans for new attractions in 2022. Quote, "Enter at your own risk is the overarching theme of haunted houses, including COVID. Patrons can wear facial masks. That's fine," said Hall. "People are ready, and we'll make it worth the time and money," he noted. Schultz agreed. Quote, "Everyone is in the mood to get out and do something fun. Our job is to entertain the masses," unquote. We turn the page now to the Cedar Valley section. 125th anniversary weekend set at Walnut Ridge Baptist Church Saturday and Sunday. Story filed by Melody Parker, and begins with a photograph of the great window at the Walnut Ridge Baptist Church, which is holding a 125th anniversary celebration on Saturday and Sunday. Waterloo. In June 1896, four men studied a triangular piece of land at the corner of Walnut and Lime Streets. From their perch on a log in a grove of trees, the men envisioned building a church on the site and purchased the land for $350. Later that year, Walnut Street Baptist Church opened its doors to worshipers. After 125 years, Walnut Ridge Baptist Church, now at Annsboro and Ridgeway Avenues, will remember its deep roots and firm foundation in the community at an anniversary celebration Saturday and Sunday. Quote, "We are shaped by our past and a long history of solid Bible preaching and teaching, and continuing to emphasize the Word of God is what has kept us going for 125 years, said the Reverend Tom Hlad, senior pastor at Walnut Ridge Baptist Church. On Saturday, there will be tours from 2 to 4 p.m. of the historic church building at 415 Walnut Street. Shuttles will run from the church at 1307 West Ridgeway Avenue to the downtown historic site. From 5 to 7:30 p.m., there will be a church family banquet at Walnut Ridge. Dave Tebenkamp will be a guest speaker. On Sunday, the 10 a.m. worship service at Walnut Ridge will feature Tom Kappen from the Iowa Association of Regular Baptist Churches and John Greening, songs, special music, and testimonies. A family luncheon follows at noon in Fellowship Hall. an evening worship service at 5:30 p.m. will feature speaker Mike Augsburger. Throughout the day, historical displays will be open for viewing in room 205. In the 1900s, a growing congregation required construction of a new Walnut Street Baptist Church building at the same location on Walnut Street. Architect Clinton P. Shockley designed a brick structure influenced by the English Arts and Crafts Movement, the Chicago School, and Beaux-Arts Architecture. It housed one of the largest Baptist congregations in Iowa, with seating for 1,400, according to historians, and hosted revivals by evangelist Billy Sunday. Quote, "We have some members in their 90s who remember being in the nursery at the old church," said Halad. His wife, Christine, remembers attending services and Sunday school at the old church where her late father, the Reverend David Moore, was youth pastor and then senior pastor from 1956 to 1974. Moore ministered in Ohio before returning to Waterloo and serving as pastor emeritus from 1998 to 2015. He died in 2016. Halad, an Ohio native, met Christine Moore when her father took a position at a church in the Cleveland area. They were married in 1976. The congregation moved to its current location at Ansboro and Ridgeway Avenues in 1971. The Walnut Street building was sold to another church and renamed Faith Temple Baptist Church. It has been vacant for about 10 years and was placed on the National Register of Historic Places in 2000. In 2019, Iowa Heartland Habitat for Humanity bought the church for $40,000 on behalf of the Walnut Neighborhood Housing Coalition. The group wants to stop further deterioration of the building and develop ideas and funding to save it as part of ongoing neighborhood revitalization efforts. There are currently 200 members at the Walnut Ridge Church, representing a diverse cross-section of the community. Quote, "It ebbs and flows. We have visitors coming for services every week. Some stay and become members. We've had several find us online during the COVID pandemic and came," Halad said. Although the church was closed to visitors for about 3 months at the beginning of the COVID pandemic, Halad regularly posted sermons online to minister to his flock. Quote, "There's a good pride in that people have held true to what's important and stayed connected to their faith family. That's a positive," said Halad. "No matter where we are or have been as far as location, the Bible is our foundation, and that never changes," unquote. The church has a lengthy history in Sunday school education and youth ministry and mission work. In 1908, 500 people participated in Sunday school. The church started 4 Sunday school chapels in various Waterloo neighborhoods. 2 of the chapels later became Burton Avenue Baptist Church and Hangerman Baptist Church. In 1952, Walnut Street Church built a Sunday school building across the street. Waterloo Ridge Baptist Academy was created in 1973 at the current location, although now operating as a separate entity known as Waterloo Christian School. It is still housed on Walnut Ridge property. Halad is excited about the future. Quote, "I'm looking forward to seeing how God intends to use the church to raise up the people and how best to minister to our community," unquote. Our next story was filed by Andy Malone, Cedar Falls Council to consider condo plan. Cedar Falls. The 6.38-acre commercial vacant lot at the corner of Cedar Heights and Valley High Drives is in the process of being rezoned for residential development. Items associated with the proposal for 6 three-story condos with 12 units each came before City Council on Monday for possible votes after the Valley High Condo Association, representing the residents on Legacy Lane behind the proposed site, raised concerns in a petition regarding future construction. LG Companies, LLC, based in Cedar Falls, appeased most, if not all of them. It was revealed at the Planning and Zoning Commission meeting earlier this month. The 4 major concerns dealt with potential flooding, light pollution, and line-of-sight issues, as well as the possibility of Legacy Lane being used as a through street. Quote, obviously, all of us would like a nice, quiet field next to our houses, but we always knew it was going to get developed, and I think this situation, as it's been panning out, is about as ideal as it's going to get, said HOA President Jubal Sloan. Her comments came at the meeting where the commission approved city staff recommendation, with one abstention from Commissioner Kyle Larson, who has an interest in the real estate company and recused himself from discussion. Some 162 parking spaces would be provided for 72 two-bedroom units that are intended to be sold, not leased. The development would be completed in three phases, two complexes per phase. Two single driveways from Cedar Heights Drive are proposed for access. If given the green light by Council Monday, site plans go through the planning and zoning process at a later date, and there would be further opportunities for comment. The 6.38-acre plot, labeled Hannah Park Commercial, was bought by LG Companies LLC from Heartland Development Cedar Valley Incorporated for $400,000 in January 2020. Quote, the proposed site is currently zoned C1 commercial, which only allows residential uses with special approval by the Planning and Zoning Commission and City Council, states planner Chris Sevi in a letter to city officials. Quote, also, the C1 commercial district has a two-story, 35-foot height limitation, which precludes the proposed three-story, 42-foot buildings from being built, unquote. The developer wants to rezone the property to an RP, planned resident district, so condominiums can be built. That requires an amendment to the future land use map of 12.5 acres from office and business park to medium density residential. That would require the 6.38 acres at the northwest corner of Cedar Heights Drive and Valley High Drive, and the remainder would be south of Valley High Drive, some of which is owned by LG Companies. The area on the east side of Cedar Heights Drive is also designated as medium-density residential. The amount of commercial and office space indicated on future land use map along with this corridor may be excessive given the lower traffic volume, Sevi said in a meeting, but additional residential development will provide needed housing in the community to help create more demand for nearby retail and commercial services, unquote. Amy Rivers filed this story. Local Labor Council endorses Waterloo-Cedar Falls candidates in upcoming election. Waterloo, a labor council that includes several unions in the Cedar Valley, released its list of candidate endorsements in the upcoming city and school board elections. The Hawkeye Area Labor Council, a coalition of 83 affiliated public and private unions in 26 counties, covering more than 16,000 members, voted to endorse a slate of candidates within its eastern Iowa area Tuesday night, according to the council's executive director, Rick Moyle. Quote, worker-friendly candidates is what we want, Moyle said, noting all candidates were sent extensive questionnaires. Membership voted with at least two-thirds in favor, and the delegates' vote was unanimous. Candidates endorsed in Waterloo include Mayor Quentin Hart for re-election, Rob Nichols for an at-large city council seat, John Childs for his Ward 1 bid, Nia Wilder for her Ward 3 bid, and Ward 5 city councilor Ray Foos for re-election. T.J. Frayne was the lone candidate endorsed for Cedar Falls City Council for an at-large seat. The council also endorsed one Cedar Falls school board candidate, Jeff Orvis. The council also endorsed several city council and school board candidates in Cedar Rapids and Iowa City, two in Coralville, two in Mason City, and one in Marshalltown. The Cedar Valley unions under the Hawkeye Area Labor Council umbrella include AFSCME, Teamsters Local 238, United Auto Workers 838, United Faculty at UNI, and more, according to the council. You are listening to the reading of the Waterloo Cedar Falls, the Courier, for Friday, October 1st on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. Now let's turn to today's obituaries. Cedar Falls, Dr. Albert R. Gilgan, 90, of Cedar Falls, died Monday, January 4th, 2021, at Rosewood Estate in Waterloo. Graveside services will be 11 a.m. Saturday, October 9th, 2021, at Greenwood Cemetery in Cedar Falls. Military honors to be provided by the Cedar Falls AMVETS Post 49 and Navy Honor Guard. Online condolences may be left at www.richardsonfuneralservice.com. Cedar Falls. Donna Emma, maiden name Lee Stahl, age 85, of Cedar Falls, passed away September 29, 2021. Donna was born January 15, 1936. There will be an obituary in Sunday's paper. Services are pending. Veda Ann Frazier, born January 23 to Wilbur and Mildred Simmons in Waterloo, Iowa. She passed away September 18 in Mason City, Iowa. Preceded in death by her parents, three brothers, Butch, Don, and Lloyd, sister Zola, daughter Roxanne Frazier, and husband Ed Hawkins. Survived by her children, Pam of Minnesota, Michael of Kansas, Robert and Becky of Iowa, and Pamela of Virginia. Her siblings Wayne and Gary, 12 grandchildren, 35 great-grandchildren, and 4 great-great-grandchildren. Veda enjoyed going to flea markets, collecting frogs, embroidering, quilt making, and especially spending time with Ed, talking and drinking coffee with their friends. Graveside service will be held Friday, October 8, 2021, at 11 a.m. in Garden of Memories, 3669 Logan Avenue, Waterloo, Iowa. Memorial and luncheon directly after graveside service at Faith Assembly of God, 5112 Lafayette Road, Elk Run Heights, Iowa. In lieu of flowers, donations may be made to Faith Assembly of God. Cedar Falls, Joanne Neal, 81, of Cedar Falls, died on Wednesday, September 29, 2021, at her home. Memorial services will be 2:30 p.m. Monday, October 4, 2021, at Prairie Lakes Church Chapel. Visitation is 1 hour prior to service. Memorials may be directed to American Cancer Society or Cedar Valley Hospice. Online condolences may be left at www.richardsonfuneralservice.com. Cedar Falls. Ron Ryby, 83, of Georgetown, Texas, formerly of Cedar Falls and Evansdale, died Monday, September 27, 2021. He owned and operated Ron Supervalue stores in the area during the 1970s. A celebration of life will be held at 10 a.m. Saturday, October 2nd, at Ramsey Funeral Home, 5600 Williams Drive, Georgetown, Texas. See www.ramseyfuneral.com for a full obituary. Now, there's a lot of local news in the Courier today, so let's get back to reading that. Name released in fatal crash near Hudson, filed by Jeff Reinitz. The story begins with a photograph of the crash scene. The semi-tractor trailer that was involved is overturned. We see fire trucks on the scene, and they're putting out a fire caused by the van that was hit in the collision. And the caption says, a semi and pickup truck collided head-on at near Hudson and Strayer Roads, north of Hudson on Tuesday. Hudson. Authorities have released the identity of the Hudson man who perished in a Tuesday morning crash north of town. Paul Cool of Hudson died when his pickup truck crashed head-on into a semi and burst into flames, according to Hudson Police Department. The crash happened on Hudson Road, just south of Strayer Road, as Cool was driving his Ford F-150 pickup truck south. The pickup truck crossed the center line and collided with a semi driven by Eddie Veenstra of Otley. Veenstra received minor injuries, according to the police department. Sumner Police Chief resigns. his trial for second OWI charges next month. Amy Rivers filed this story. Sumner. Sumner's police chief resigned this week after less than a year on the job and 5 months after getting charged with drunken driving in a nearby county. Chad Koch submitted his resignation at a recent city council meeting, according to city clerk Lisa Oberbrockling. The city would not confirm if Koch had faced discipline prior to resigning. Koch, 41, of 213 West 1st Street, was charged April 18th with second offense operating while under the influence, an aggravated misdemeanor, and possession or carrying of dangerous weapons while under the influence, a serious misdemeanor, according to online court records. Koch pleaded not guilty to the charges in June. His bench trial is slated to begin November 2nd. According to a previous Courier article, Koch was pulled over in Harding County at 10:40 p.m. that night after a witness reported seeing a vehicle traveling east on U.S. Highway 20 almost enter a ditch and hit another vehicle. Koch was also reportedly ran a stop sign before the deputy pulled him over on the eastbound 175 exit on County Road D-35. After Koch failed field sobriety tests, he was detained and transported to the jail for further testing. His blood alcohol content level was 0.09% at the time, records state. Koch's first OWI charge was on New Year's Day 2015 in Polk County, when police received 3 911 reports from motorists of a gray SUV driving onto an off-ramp near Merle Hay Road in Des Moines. Koch then corrected himself before proceeding onto Interstate 80 and traveling east at a high rate of speed, records state. Koch was stopped by Urbandale Police and the Iowa State Patrol. His blood alcohol content level was 0.172%, records show. He received a deferred judgment for that charge. Koch began working at the department October 1, 2020, and was sworn in by former Mayor Jeff Smith on October 5, 2020. Jeff Reinitz filed this story. Second person sentenced to prison in Wild West-style shootout in Waterloo. Waterloo. A second person has been sentenced to prison on gun charges in connection with a 2020 shootout outside a liquor store that a federal judge described as a scene from the Wild West. Demetrius Chambray Cannon, 35, of Waterloo, who was shot in the ankle and now uses the assistance of a wheelchair, was sentenced to 2 years in prison during a hearing Wednesday in U.S. District Court in Cedar Rapids. Following prison, he will be on supervised release for 3 years. Cannon, who was barred from possessing guns because of a prior felony drug conviction in Wisconsin, pleaded to one count of felon in possession of a firearm in connection with the Waterloo gun battle. Authorities said Cannon was involved in a shootout with Charles Anthony Ware outside the New Star Liquor on West 4th Street around 2 a.m. September 25, 2020. When the shooting ceased, Cannon ran off and police found Ware crawling in the street trying to distance himself from a .38 caliber Colt MK4 pistol. Cannon later told authorities he and Ware had been involved in a prior confrontation outside the store earlier that night, according to court records. Ware, 47, who had some 30 prior convictions, was sentenced to 7.5 years in prison in August during a hearing where the presiding judge likened the gun battle to a scene from the Wild West. Teen arrested in March home robbery in Waterloo. Story filed by Jeff Reinitz. Waterloo. A teen has been arrested in a March home robbery in Waterloo in which one of the residents was clubbed with a gun. Breon Robertson, 17, of Marion, was arrested Tuesday for one count of first-degree robbery. Robertson is being charged as an adult. Authorities allege a resident at 429 Anthony Street found two or three intruders inside his home around 1:30 a.m. March 28th. One of the assailants struck him in the head with a gun, and the suspects fled with cash and other items. One of the attackers allegedly dropped a cell phone during the robbery and police traced the phone to Robertson, according to court records. A month later, in April, police arrested the Anthony Street resident, Ivan Luquette Clay Jr., for firearm and drug charges after he allegedly shot at a home at 740 Hope Avenue. Jeff Reinitz also filed this story, Handgun Found in Backpack at Waterloo East High. Waterloo. Authorities detained a teen after school officials found a handgun in his backpack at East High School on Wednesday. Officials were alerted that the 15-year-old possibly had an air gun in his backpack Wednesday morning, but upon inspection, school employees found a pistol. A loaded magazine was also found in the backpack. The firearm had been reported stolen in Mount Pleasant, police said. Administration took immediate action to involve Waterloo Police Department and to ensure the safety of our staff and students was maintained, said Akwi Nej, Waterloo Community Schools spokeswoman. The teen was detained on charges of carrying weapons on school grounds, minor in possession of a weapon, and third-degree theft. Police said there were no injuries or threats involved in the incident. Now let's read the Metro Briefs column. Cedar Falls officers don pink patches. Cedar Falls. Cedar Falls Public Safety will join the Pink Patch Project this month to support breast cancer awareness. Public safety officers will wear a bright pink version of the police and fire uniform patches to raise funds for those affected by breast cancer. The Public Safety Department will also be selling the pink patches to the community. All proceeds will be donated to the Beyond Pink team. Both police and fire patches are available. Patches can be purchased at the Public Safety Building, 4600 South Main Street, and Cedar Falls City Hall, 220 Clay Street. American Legion meets Monday, Waterloo. Cedar Falls American Legion Auxiliary Unit 237 meets at 2 p.m. Monday at the Cedar Falls AmVets, 1934 Irving Street. Memberships for the year 2022 are now payable. New members are welcome. Call 277-3780 if you have any questions. Cancer Prevention Discussion Thursday, Waterloo. The Unity Point Health Allen Hospital Community Cancer Center will host a live panel discussion with information about cancer prevention at 6 p.m. Thursday virtually on Zoom. Panelists will discuss cancer prevention statistics, prevention recommendations, lifestyle choices, power of prevention, and additional resources and tools. There is no cost, and all are welcome to join. Questions may be submitted in advance to allenhospital@unitypoint.org. For accessing the Zoom link, visit www.unitypoint.org/waterloo/cancer-prevention. Midwest One AIDS Cedar Falls Pool Project, Cedar Falls. A $15,000 donation will pay for the technology center in a planned pool facility at the new Cedar Falls High School, fundraisers announced this week. The Midwest One Foundation and the Cedar Falls Midwest One Bank branch have jointly committed to provide the gift for future construction of the indoor community pool facility, also known as a natatorium. Construction is expected to begin in 2023, with a planned opening in the fall of 2024. The school district and the city will jointly fund the project with community fundraising of $3.3 million necessary to complete the natatorium. To date, community contributions total $1.6 million. Two pools will be included in the building. One pool will be a 10-lane, 25-yard by 25-meter deep water competition pool. The second pool will be a 4-lane, shallower, warmer temperature pool for teaching and therapeutic use. Parking and an entrance separate from the high school will allow community use during school hours. More information about the project, including pledge and contribution information, can be found at cfschools.org/cfpool. Unity Point Opening Mental Health Clinic, Waterloo. Unity Point Health will open a mental health walk-in clinic Monday inside entrance 6B at Allen Hospital. The clinic will help expand access to mental health services and will primarily serve patients with acute mental health needs. The clinic will be open from 9 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. Monday through Friday and offer counseling sessions on a walk-in basis with no appointment necessary. Licensed behavioral health professionals on staff will aim to address any immediate concerns and then evaluate follow-up options. The clinic will serve individuals 18 and older. Patients are advised to go to the Allen Hospital Emergency Department if they are needing immediate medical attention, are a danger to themselves or others, are demonstrating aggressive behavior, or experiencing a crisis when the walk-in clinic is closed. Cyclocross races set this weekend, Cedar Falls. Twisted Spokes Race Team, a local bicycle racing team, will host cyclocross races Saturday and Sunday at Tondro Prey Bike Park, East Main and North Logan Avenue. 13 USA Cycling sanctioned races will take place, including men's master 35+, 45+, and 55+, juniors, single speed, master women 35+, and other divisions. Races will begin at 9:30 a.m. both days and end at approximately 4:30 p.m. Pre-register at https://www.bikereg.com/twisted-cross-2021. A beginner's course takes place at the park at 5:30 p.m. Thursday for anyone interested in learning the fundamentals. A free kids race is planned at noon Saturday, utilizing a modified cyclocross course. New on Sunday at 12:30 p.m. is a doggy cross. Owners with their dogs will run the modified cyclocross course with one winner in each of three size classes. Amy Rivers filed this next story. Waterloo Council to consider 2030 plan, Greyhound Drive parking, ICE rate increases. And it begins with a photograph of Waterloo Mayor Quinton Hart. Waterloo. The City Council will officially go on record supporting or opposing the city's vision plan for the next decade on Monday. Mayor Quinton Hart submitted his Waterloo Vision 2030 plan, which features 8 big accomplishments in 8 years, on the City Council agenda for Monday. The plan, put together by De Novo Marketing, is likely to include trying to lure a Topgolf-like entertainment facility to the Crossroads Center area, which council members were previously split on at a planning session unveiling the ideas in August. The proposal includes broader plans that encompass equity, sustainability, and economic development, according to De Novo. That includes more youth sports facilities to attract statewide youth tournaments, investing in housing, and promoting the city's successes with better communication. Quote, audacious? Maybe. Doable? Yes. Unquote. The overview document reads, quote, it will take work, resources, and patience, but the end result is a community that is connected, proud, succeeding, elevating its youth, celebrating diversity, and leading the way across the state and nation, unquote. In other business, the council will consider whether to approve a ban on parking on Greyhound Drive because of semi-parking due to overflow from the nearby Lowe's travel stop. The ordinance to ban parking passed a first reading at the last meeting, but council members wanted to wait on the second and third readings in order to gather more public input, particularly from Lowe's. Also, increasing the rates for using Young Area's ice rink by $15 per hour for the next 2 years. The contracted ice rate would raise from $175 to $190 per hour, and the non-contracted rate would raise from $185 to $200 per hour, beginning this month through September 30th of 2023, under the proposal, which was adopted by the Leisure Services Commission in September. The ICE rate increase would be in line with or lower than other rinks in the area, according to Mark Gallagher, recreation superintendent. He noted the rate had not increased in the last three seasons. Whether to approve $250,000 to furnish and install a catwalk through the existing Waterloo Convention Center roof. The project would add 24 weeks to the Convention Center reconstruction timeline, according to Cardinal Construction, and would add $249,311 to the cost. Cardinal is also asking for three other change orders at Monday's meeting. The council will also consider whether to add pregnancy loss, such as stillbirth and miscarriage, to its bereavement policy for city employees. Councillor Jonathan Greider will bring the policy up for consideration at the council's work session prior to the regular meeting, asking the Human Resources Department to add it, quote, at an appropriate time, quote, by promoting and leading by example. The City of Waterloo can raise awareness on this issue and help employees in their time of grief and need, Greider wrote in the resolution. They'll also consider accepting a grant money from the Governor's Office of Drug Control to pay for overtime costs associated with combating heroin and methamphetamine-related crimes in the area. The grants are $7,000 to assist in mid- and high-level heroin investigations, and $28,000 to assist in similar levels of meth-related criminal investigations. The money will go toward the Tri-County Drug Task Force's overtime costs, according to Waterloo Police Captain Matt McGow. City Council members and the WPD have previously noted the police department was taking on unsustainable amounts of overtime, at least partially due to staffing and retention issues, as well as large events like RAGBRAI and Iowa Irish Fest. Frank Thomas heads group that buys Field of Dreams site, filed by the Associated Press, and begins with a photograph of former Chicago White Sox player and Hall of Famer Frank Thomas, and he's holding the 2005 World Series Champion Trophy. Dyersville. Frank Thomas has found his Field of Dreams. The Hall of Famer has headed a venture that bought controlling interest in Go the Distance baseball stake of All-Star Ballpark Haven and the Field of Dreams movie site. The company said Thursday that This Is Heaven LLC, a company of the 53-year-old Thomas and Chicago real estate developer Rick Heidner, bought the interests in Go the Distance baseball, owned by the Denise M. Stillman Trust. Thomas will be chief executive officer, and former Chicago White Sox general manager Dan Evans will be the chief operating officer. Stillman headed a group that bought the field, the location of the 1989 movie Field of Dreams, and the adjacent Lansing Family Farm in 2011. The site of about 190 acres includes a working cornfield. She died in 2018. Major League Baseball built a ballpark adjacent to the movie site, and the New York Yankees and Chicago White Sox played the first big league game there on October 12th. The Chicago Cubs and Cincinnati Reds are scheduled to play there next August 11th. Thomas, a five-time All-Star and two-time AL MVP, nicknamed the Big Hurt, was inducted into the Hall of Fame in 2014. Powerball jackpot raises to $620 million, the 10th largest in the U.S., filed by the Associated Press. Des Moines. After nearly 4 months without a big winner, the Powerball jackpot has climbed to an estimated $620 million, making it the 10th largest U.S. lottery prize ahead of Saturday night's drawing. There have been 39 drawings in a row without a Powerball grand prize winner, dating back to the last time someone hit the jackpot on June 5th. There's no mystery why it's been so long since a player has hit the jackpot. The odds are a steep 1 in 292.2 million. Although the jackpot is billed as 162 million, that is the estimate for the annuity option paid over 30 years. Winners nearly always opt for the cash option, which for Saturday's drawing will be an estimated $446 million. Either way, it's a huge amount of money, though it's far from the record prize. That was a $1.586 billion Powerball jackpot won in 2016 by ticket holders from California, Florida, and Tennessee. Powerball is played in 45 states plus Washington, D.C., the U.S. Virgin Islands, and Puerto Rico. Former Eldridge cop charged with sexually abusing 14-year-old girl while on duty. Story filed by Thomas Geyer. A former Eldridge police officer was sexually abusing a 14-year-old girl while on duty, according to charges brought by the Iowa Division of Criminal Investigation. Andrew Patrick Donahue, 24, who resigned Monday, was taken into custody Tuesday night and booked into Scott County Jail with a $10,000 cash-only bond. The assault happened May 1st, while Donahue was employed and on duty as an Eldridge police officer, according to the arrest affidavit. He's charged with third-degree sexual abuse, a Class C felony under Iowa law that carries a prison sentence of 10 years. Eldridge Police Chief Joseph Sisler said Tuesday night that he was called to Donahue's residence in Davenport Monday night. Donahue gave Sisler a verbal resignation. Donahue then signed a letter of resignation Tuesday morning at the Eldridge Police Department. Donahue was with the Davenport Police Department beginning in January 2019 before moving over to Eldridge about a year ago. The Iowa Division of Criminal Investigation began investigating Donahue on Friday, September 24th, at the request of the Scott County Sheriff's Office and the Eldridge Police Department, according to a news release from the Iowa Department of Public Safety. Donahue's arraignment is scheduled for 11 a.m. October 14th in Scott County Court. And that does it for today's reading of the Waterloo Cedar Falls, The Courier, for Friday, October 1st. I'm your reader, Bob Young. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org, at any time, and you may wish to stay tuned now to the reading of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald, which will follow shortly. Thank you for listening to Your Iris, Iowa's first and only radio reading service.